The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello friends, I'm your host, Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast.
Jeff, how are you, brother?
I'm good, mate. Good.
Good.
How are you?
Yes, I'm wonderful. Congratulations on your book.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, mate. It's been a long old year doing it, but very much worth it. Very much worth it.
Well, mate, you've been on a long old slog, haven't you? First the Royal Marines, serving not only in the Falklands, but also Northern Ireland, and then a full career in the fire service.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to chat to you today, Jeff, because, you know, I'm all about mindset these days and help. It seems that every man and his dog, plus every woman, seem to be struggling with their mental health. And I'm really big on that. You know, I say to everyone, yeah, there's no reason every day not to wake up in paradise. If you've got stuff, you got to heal the past and move on. And I thought you'd be the ideal candidate to discuss this through, because you've also gone on to be what would you call yourself, like a fitness instructor or a well-being?
I suppose I'm a mindset, mental health and exercise coach. That's the kind of qualification I've got. I've done a courses and stuff like that, and obviously nearly 60 years of experience, which to me means a lot more than any qualifications, as you probably agree. If you've been through a bit of hardship, you can then help other people, in my opinion.
Jeff, so what are you?
That's where I am.
You grew up in Newcastle.
Yeah. North Shields.
Yeah. You, like me, we had that. I'm just figuring, 70s childhood, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What do we think, when you look at young people now, it's incredibly different.
Yes.
What do you think the good points about growing up in the 70s were, and what do you think were the not so good?
Let's hit the good points first. From where I think kids and children are going to struggle these days is resilience. I don't know about you, but when I was young, I was born 1964, so I was, you know, in the early 70s, you'd go out to play with your mates, you'd be out all day, you'd fall over, you'd hurt yourself, you'd come back, your mum would kiss you on the cheek, oh, you're all right, back out you go, stuff like that. And you learned to climb trees, you learned to play football, you took hits, a bit of bullying, a bit of this, a bit of that. I just think moving forward, this isn't a pop at children, this is it's just life, isn't it? It's very rare you'll see kids playing outside now. Certainly around my area, the streets I would be on, it would be just gangs of kids and things playing. And I know there's cars and there's busyness, but there's certainly fields and playgrounds, but you don't ever see congregation of kids playing. And I think that's a little bit of a lacking these days. I mean, I don't want to judge. It's a lot of them will be stuck inside on their computers and things, or they'll come in from school and they might have a boatload of homework. They haven't got time to go out, or maybe their mom and dad are a bit overprotective. But back in our day, it was literally, if you haven't got school, you're out first thing in the morning. You come back to get fed and watered, and then you're back out again, and you'll come back to get fed and watered, and then you're off to bed again. And even school, you would rush home from school to get out and play out and, you know, get them knocks of growing up. We all took a lot of knocks growing up, whether it's, you know, like I say, falling off a wall you climbed over, trees, playing football, getting hard tackled, anything like that. But I don't tend to see that these days. I don't know about you down at your neck of the woods, but
I think it's universal, isn't it, now? And
yeah.
like you say, the some of the best moments in my childhood, we used to just go on adventures, you know, out the house in the morning, as soon as we got up, maybe watch Tarzan first, which I used to love.
Yeah, yeah. Lord of the Jungle, absolutely.
You know, even that though, you know, Tarzan was like my role model and it always is and always will be. And as such, I've had a wonderful life. On the downside, let's talk about corporal punishment, because I think young people these days would find it really hard to understand that when we was kids, I'd say any adult, because that was my experience. Obviously, my experience isn't the same as everyone's, but when I was young, you know, it was like any adult could come up, smack you around the head. Half the time, you hadn't done anything wrong. They thought you were someone else or something, you know. But if you weren't paying attention in class, you could get the board rubber thrown at you as hard as the teacher could, and it would smash people's faces up. Yes, all I was going to say is I think it's very different now. If you did that to a child, you'd probably be facing prison, if not more. But I just picked up on it, Jeff, because you mentioned corporal punishment in your book.
In my book, yeah. Like, I mean, I have not had your experience, and I can't remember any random people hitting me. You never know. But school-wise, my teacher had a big slipper on the end of his desk, and that was, you knew you were getting that slipper if you were, you know, what you call in them days, naughty. Whereas these days, I don't think you would get that. And rightly so, by the way. I mentioned in my book, it would be classed as assault now, getting hit with a slipper or something like that. And by no means am I saying it was a good thing then, but it was our time. It was our time. And I'm sure a lot of these teachers have reflected on what they did and thought, hold on, I shouldn't really have done that. I should have talked to them or something like that. But that was the culture in them days. And if you were wrong again, you would go to the headmaster and get you know, punishment. Again, where was the sitting down and talking to you and explaining? That's how I would go these days, and rightly so. Back in them days, it was definitely classed as assault, but we didn't know any different. And I suppose, in a way, they're ruled by fear instead of respect. And sometimes your fear and respect morph into one, but it was definitely more fear of stepping out of the line than respecting our teacher. You were scared rather than you would be a good lad or a good girl because you respected that teacher, not because you feared them. And I think in my day, we feared the teachers. And me personally, that isn't a good thing. You should be talking to them now and explaining how you should behave. That's just my opinion. But you're right, it was hard times. But I certainly didn't have it as bad as you, but there was humiliation involved.
Let's come and talk about Royal Marines training, because both you and I made that decision to go down to Lympston. I heard recently that they've added another 4 weeks to the training as like a pre-build-up. I don't know how authentic this is, but apparently it's because, or this was what I was told, the young men now are just physically not built like we were, with respect that we was always throwing ourselves out of trees and on our BMXs and all this kind of stuff. Do you think that it's probably softened a bit around the edges?
I've never heard of that extra 4 weeks. I mean, back in my day, they never had the pre tests either. I don't know if you wouldn't have had them either, did you? The pre course 4 days.
Yeah, it was called the PRC in my day, the potential recruits course.
Yes,
three days, and to be honest, you bloody did everything on that 3 days that you do in training thereabouts. We just did it in loose order. Obviously, we didn't do a 30 miler, but we did the endurance course as civilians.
Yeah.
No, it's now called the Potential Royal Marines course. And you guys just rocked up down there, did you, after the...
Yeah, like I say out my book, I mean, a few weeks earlier I was at school and then I got through my tests and things. And just 4 days after my 17th birthday, I was on the train heading down there and into Lympston. So straight into there, we had no And even then, there wasn't very many videos and things like that, mobile phones where you could do a bit of Google search and things like that. It was basically off that train and then into the training, you know what I mean, into the camp. I think it's probably a good idea, the pre, because it costs a lot of money to get a Marine from basic to end game, doesn't it? So it's probably not a bad thing to whittle out the guys who aren't going to make it. Because of the cost implication, if nothing else. But as for guys not being as up and ready for it as we were in them days, I suppose there's always that, isn't there? But I find a lot of young lads these days that are into their weight training and their fitness. Back in our day, I think it was just running. I was just a runner. I never joined a gym till I was 18, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Weight training and things like that wasn't a thing. But a lot of the guys these days, I mean, I've got a son, he's coming, he's 26, 27. He started to go to the gym. A lot of that peer group started to go to the gym and stuff like that. So I don't know if they're going to be, it might be a mental thing they mightn't be as prepared, but physically they may be. Do you know what I mean? A lot of them play sports, football, rugby. So they're probably prepared physically, but the mental side of it is, as you know, and all the guys who are watching this will know, That is most of it. If you can't handle it mentally, you're not going to do it, are you? So that's probably where that little 4 or 5 time week thing will help them, because if you're not right there, anyone can run usually and do a few press ups, sit ups. It's the intensity of everything else, isn't it?
Absolutely,
the mindset. Yeah.
I should point out to our friends, I didn't ask Jeff that. I'm not trying to put down any Royal Marines, not at all. I'm just honestly fascinated from what would we say, an anthropological perspective about how life is changing and how it's becoming so much more digitalized is the word, and how this affects our mental health, how it changes our bodies physically. If you think about it, Jeff, our ancestors must have been pretty nails. You know, they came through all kind of weather, ice ages, famines, droughts, etc. I reckon, I mean, people can see now that we're easily capable of running up to 100, sometimes 200. Some people run 300 miles in one go.
Yeah.
Be interested to see where we're going to be in another 50, 100, 100 years with all the technology.
Technology, nutrition, everything's come on, hasn't it? Sports science, it's
come on and it hasn't come on, isn't it? You know?
Yes. Yeah.
There's nothing like putting your trainers on and just going for a run.
Yeah. It can be too easy going the other way, can't it? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now you're like, right, what gym bag do I have? Is it fashionable? What wireless earphones have I got? What am I listening to? What am I going to wear to the... Yes, times change. Let's talk about...
Chris, even going back to our day, even your trainers. Trainers these days are the way about an ounce in that phenomenal. Going back to our day, you know, if it wasn't for weight pumps, you know, you'd have to run in them flats. No wonder we've all got knackered knees, you know what I mean? It's and the boots and everything's evolved from them, which is a great thing. But everything's evolved, I think, but like you say, most of it is good, but the other way, the resilience side of it might have dropped off a bit.
Yes. Let's talk about the Falklands. It's a particular fascination of mine. My best mate who I joined up with, his dad was CSM of Lima Company in the Falklands.
Mm-hmm.
I know how much that affected my mate's life. Back then, people probably won't realise this, but my mate used to sit, watch the news to see what battles had been fought that day, and then they'd give a list of the dead would go down the screen.
Right.
And my mate had to sit and watch that to see if his dad was dead or not. It's unreal, Jeff, isn't it? It's war.
It is.
It's unreal. We've been fortunate. We've covered lots of Falkland stories. I'll just say this: I've never met anyone in war that just hasn't been massively damaged. and never really got over it, or drunk themselves to death. You seem remarkably well balanced, Jeff, I have to say, considering most people I meet are just really, they haven't dealt with it very. I mean, that sounds a bit cruel. What I mean is, I don't think it's in our nature to send one lot of youngsters to go and kill another lot of youngsters in any scenario. Yeah. What was your experience of it all?
Well, first of all, I was in 4-2 Commando, K Company, one troop, a young lad, 17, just turned 18. I got the call, got home. My mum, the police had been at the door and said, I've got to go back to my units. Like most of the guys who went, not a clue where the Falklands was, what's going on, you know. We literally get down there and it's just a hive of activity. But I mean, I don't want to go over you. You probably had guys on who've talked about the battles, Mount Harriet and stuff like that. That's where I was involved with, obviously through K Company, one troop. Quite good battles from a loss point of view. I mean, we done my job. We took Mount Harriet, a few other little skirmishes. Absolutely textbook. Some people might call it attack up the hill, and stuff like that. Took a lot of prisoners. Killed a lot of guys. We lost a couple. It wasn't until afterwards. That's the whole thing of what I did. Writing this book has just makes you realise what you actually went through at the time, because you don't know at the time. You know what I mean? You're just doing your job, and being so young as well. It was like a bit surreal, if you like. Like I say, this book has brought it all back, quite good in a good way, but certainly a few negative ways where I've overthought and had a big think about things. But my time in the Falklands was, as you know, the guys you've talked to, physical, the weather, the conditions, just the battles we had to do against outnumbered, and you know, we took Mount Harriet, you know.
How did you survive? Because so Mount Kem, was that the SAS fought a battle there, and then was it?
Yeah, we sort of found that there's a lot of controversy over that. I'm not sure. Apparently they were coming down, we went up. There was a few contacts there. And then we stayed there for a little while. We're not Bergens or anything, or fucking freezing. It was a proper bind. It was literally, like I say, we had what we had in our pockets, rations wise, fucking packed the Rolos and the fucking biscuits or something like that. But it was freezing. We had our kit was wet, and we only got our Bergens. I think it was probably a day and a half later. And that was just like a godsend, where we could change our clothes and then get ready for the attack on Mount Harriet, which followed later, you know. Absolutely. Yeah. Obviously, what stood when goes in good stead was most we had done in Norway. Obviously, Arctic stuff, we're well versed in how to change your socks if they're wet and stuff like that. But if you haven't got anything to change into, you're struggling, aren't you? So, obviously, it helped with being Arctic trained. And I think most of the guys were. Especially, I mean, I was probably the last. There wasn't many after me that joined the unit that went to the Falklands. I think I joined in October, November, and then we got deployed in April. So there wasn't many after me who joined.
It seems criminal now that if you're going to deploy lads like that, you should at least say, lads, just grab your sleeping bag. And back then it was a poncho, wasn't it? At least grab a poncho and your sleeping bag. Because you're probably going to be out for a night or two. It's
possibly, but at the same time, you don't want to be coming under contact with big packs on and things like that. You know, I mean, we went in on a helicopters most of the time, left our packs there. They were obviously meant to come behind with, but logistics and things like that. And I believe we're a bit short of helicopters by then. So it just didn't happen straight away anyway. We got our packs eventually. Which was nice.
And how do you ever sort of get over? Or, I mean, you saw a lot of dead people. I'm guessing for the most part, young Argentines.
Yes.
And I obviously will come on and talk about your firefighting career, in which you obviously did the same. But
absolutely, more so, yeah.
How do you process that? Or not let it affect you?
Absolutely. That's a better way of putting it. Not letting it affect you too much. The way to do it, the way I cope with it, at the time, I would say, I mean, probably that was probably the first time you'd seen dead bodies, like a lot of the guys, unless they worked in some kind of other environment or they've seen somebody, you know, dead, if you like. But that was the first time. And when you see that, you just look at it and you process it, obviously, and then you're moving on, aren't you? You're moving on to your next task, or, you know, or you've got to process the prisoners and things like that. It's only afterwards that you start to think about it and try and process it in such a way that these guys are human, you know what I mean? These guys are someone's dad or someone's brother. That's when the compassionate side come over afterwards. Even writing this book is what sort of got me thinking, you know, the guys who were left dead on that, you know, Mount Harriet were somebody to somebody, aren't they? That's somebody's brother or dad or brother or, you know, cousin, anything like that. They're human beings. But at the time, it was a case of if we didn't do that to them, they're going to do it to us. So that's how I processed it. If I didn't do that, they were going to do it to us guys. I suppose it's a duty thing. Again, my book's called Duty. It's a duty. Our duty was to go and sort them out. And afterwards, it's like I say, not at the time, but years later, it was a case of, you know, them guys on the top of it. And even it wasn't so much us. A lot of the troops coming up behind, we had to move them bodies and put them into some kind of graves and things like that, which obviously isn't pleasant either. But it's a case of, I suppose I parked it for a while because I didn't think about it too much. Everything was moving forward. It all come back to us, and I mentioned this in my book, is when I joined the fire service and I had a particularly nasty job. It was an explosion, and I turned up and there was a lot of bodies. And it was when I got back from that job, I started to think about the guys in the Falklands. Does that make sense? It's a funny how the mind works. So that caused me some concern, and that's when my battles, if you like, with, I believe it was PTSD at the time, I still do. That's when my little struggle started. So the knock-on effect from the fire service, the bodies I seen at this particular job, the casualties that we couldn't do nothing about, flicked us back nearly 15, 20 years to, you know, Marines time. So the brain's a funny thing, and that's why you have to try and train it to be ready for anything that's going to pop up. It never goes. It's never going to go. It's always in your mind, isn't it? Somewhere. And something might trigger it. And in my case, it was a particularly nasty job in a fire service. And I know some guys have struggled with it. Even now are struggling. And obviously we'll all try and help them as best we can. There's different coping mechanisms. Like you say, there's drink, there's drugs, there's fighting, there's anything, you know what I mean? Mine was exercise. I think that was my go-to, if you like. I didn't know at the time, but when I was training and I was in my own little world, and I think that's how I cope with it. And that's what I'm moving forward in my careers, and obviously fire service and what I do now. I really go for exercise. It doesn't have to be right, really hardcore stuff, but exercise to your own level, if you like. And it's really good for the mind. It's not a cure, but it's a help. It's a management. I think the key word we're looking for is management, I don't think there is a cure for what you've seen, what you've got up there. That's my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just sort of, I wanted to touch on the subject, Jeff, because I don't think civilians realise that they've got this big image now, and it's come from America after Vietnam, when no one supported war in America after Vietnam because they just saw this horrendous slaughter that was prolonged and prolonged for the corporations making so much money off that war, and no one supported war. That's where the peace movement came from. And what they did, because, you know, the powers that be still need their wars, they started all this thank you for your service stuff to make it to take the focus on the horrendous evil of conflict and say, hey, you know, wars are evil, but think about the veteran. Thank you for your service, sir. And they brought out these films like Platoon and all those Vietnam era films, and First Blood was a big one, where they started to focus on the soldier's story to divert people from war and slowly brainwash people through the soldier's story into that war is somehow like a heroic thing. And what it's left us with now is you've got all these youngsters, they think war is heroic. And what I try to highlight in my work is, like, I've never met anyone that's been to a war that it hasn't almost ruined their life, if not ruined their life. The veteran suicide thing is huge. The veterans make up all the suicide the homeless statistics and the substance abuse statistics and mental health statistics. And I think this is a conversation that's really, really needs to be had. So thank you for giving us your input, mate. From someone that's
no problem.
Someone that's been there. So why is it then? Why do so many Marines become firefighters?
Good question. In my opinion, it's the camaraderie, it's the teamwork, it's the giving something back to the community, because I think we're all kind of the same good people, where we want to, you know, once you join the armed forces, you're not doing it for, I don't know, Queen and Country, you're doing it to help the community, to do your bit. And I think the fire service is a natural progression, and obviously our paramedics and things like that. Anyway, where there's a good teamwork, where you're working for each other, good camaraderie, good crack, good banter, just strong teamwork. And I think the fire service delivers that. And you'll go to a job and there's an end product, if you like. So you're coming to a conclusion where you're actually helping somebody in most cases. It's a good occupation.
Yes. And friends at home, great read. I don't often get a chance to read all the books that my guests would like me to, can we say? Don't know if that made sense. What I mean is, you know, I've done like 500 podcasts and I haven't got time to read 500 books, but this one, I just knew it was going to be good and I can thoroughly recommend it. Very lovely ending as well, the way Jeff pulls all his family in, and you can clearly see he's a guy that's been through a lot in his life and he's got to a place of paradise, and that made it a really nice read. Even though your book focuses more on the fire service, Jeff, than your time in the Marines, and even though we've kind of done the opposite, just because of our time limit now, I want to come on to the mindset stuff.
Absolutely.
And so what would you say PTSD is when you see it in people? Do you think it's childhood stuff? Do you think it's on the job? Atrocity, you know, horrendous stuff that you experience on the job. Would you think it's like a combination of the two areas?
It's definitely a combination. My childhood was, I have got no complaints about my childhood. I absolutely love my childhood. Even going back over stuff, I had no problems. Obviously people did, guys did, girls did. And that just, it's probably resonating in an ear, in a later on in life, stuff like that resonates, doesn't it, later on? But my main come from, obviously, my time in the Marines, my time in the fire service. Pinpointing exactly when is the big question, isn't it? That's why you need to delve into things and, you know, your therapies and things. I don't know. I'm no way an expert. I'm a big believer in trying to manage it. I don't think you're ever going to get over these things. You just have to manage it by certain coping mechanisms, and my coping mechanism is exercise, having a positive mindset, self-talk, you know, don't be negative, think positive. You might be positive. It's all stuff like that. It's all in your hands to change your mindset, isn't it? Mindset is in your control. So you can decide how you're going to think about things. And I decide to think about things in a good and a positive way. Some guys who are going to struggle, they're always going to see the negative side. And if you're seeing the negative side and everything, you're going to be negative. That's not what I do, and that's not what I coach. I coach changing things. Look for the good side. And if you do, fuck up if you like. What you learn from that, you're not going to do that again, are you? So, you know, learn from your mistakes and build practices in your life where you're going to build your resilience as well, because you only get resilience by going through hardship, don't you, most of the time. That's how you build your resilience. We're talking about earlier with it being young. So don't try not to shy away from doing hard things. If you do hard things, you're going to build your resilience. I'm not talking about running marathons or swimming across the channel. I'm talking about doing hard things. Don't always take the easy route. Take the hard route just to challenge yourself and build a bit of resilience. You know, that's how I do it. That's what I coach.
Absolutely. Because if we don't do stuff out the box, we don't learn out the box lessons. And that means we're just like everyone else. They're not doing that well at the moment. Everyone else seems to have quite so many issues. So good point. I'm going to tell you two characteristics about you that I know you have because of your mindset. First of all, you are grateful for this life. And secondly, you refuse to be the victim. Am I right?
Correct. Yes, I refuse to be the victim. And if you've got to own what you've done, own it, deal with it, manage it. And yes, I definitely know there's no victim. You just got to build your whole life. And yet saying, I'm coming up to 60, I've still got at least another 20, 25 years to go. Life's just starting. I'm not finishing now. I am going to move on, keep getting better, keep being the best. I know it's a quote that gets pushed around all the time. Just try and be your best on your little day-to-day things, and life's going to be so much easier rather than just ducking the hard things. Hard things are going to come your way, and then deal with it. You have to deal with it. Don't push it to the side. And that's what I think life's all about. And you can have a fulfilled life. Get rid of negativity in your life. You know what I mean? Have positive things. I'm lucky. I've got a good family. I've got good friends. Everyone else is not so lucky, but look for them. Look for friends. Look for more positive people. Because if you hang around negative people, you're going to be negative, aren't you? You're going to be down. It's massive, man. It's massive. Social media is massive as well. Just stop comparing yourself to everybody else. Be your own person. Just be your own person. You look after yourself. Be careful what your nutrition is. Look after your exercise. Look after your sleep. And treat your body as, you know, an engine, if you like. Don't put shit in. If you put shit in, you're going to get shit out. Put good stuff in. Look after yourself. Bit of exercise. Good nutrition. And rest and sleep. And live your life. Always have something to look forward to. That's what I think. When people are down and they come to me and say, life's shit. What you doing next week? Oh, fucking nothing. Put something in place where you've got something to aim for. It doesn't have to be, you know, a Caribbean cruise. It could be a nice walk. It could be a little coffee with one of your friends, something like that. You need something to look forward to. Stop just existing. Get yourself in charge of your own life and create your future. That's how I roll in my life anyway, and in my coaching. Create your own future. Yeah, you're here for, you know, a good time, not a long time.
Jeff, I think you just summed it up brilliantly, brother. Yeah. And on that note, have you got any social media? I'm guessing you probably don't do that sort of thing a lot, but is there somewhere you want people to look you up?
Yeah, I'm not massive on social media. I'm Jeff Stever on Instagram, Jeff Stevenson on Facebook, and me book's on Amazon, Judy. So if anyone wants to grab that book, you can get in touch with us if they've got any questions, no bother, through my social media, but it's all good. All good.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. No problem, Jeff. It's been a real, real pleasure. Thank you for your book, because, you know, I like to read good stuff, and
good.
And I had a few nice, you know, early nights. So I always know when it's a good book because I go to bed early because I want to read it. So
you want to read.
And yeah. As someone who's written a few books, I'm very well aware of the commitment it takes. I mean, my gosh, it's a
long, old
process. So well done.
It is. Thank you.
We'll put your links below, Jeff, for everybody. We'll also put a link below to buy Jeff's book, Friends. So just have a look in the description box. That just leaves me to say, Jeff, stay on the line while I hit the record button off. But for the purposes of the tape, massive, massive thank you, Royal.
Thank you very much.
To our friends at home, please look after yourself. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Bought the T-Shirt Podcast. We'll see you soon. Much love.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.